Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show with the Alan Nathan All-Stars, picking up from the program after the late Alan Nathan's passing. But if he were here with us today, he would give to you his mantra to start the show. His mantra since 1998. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. And the Alan Nathan Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for their support over these years. And you can show them some support. Go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. And on there, you can find out more about the Alan Nathan Show, find podcasts for the program, find out about the Silker Joe Show if you decide you like it when I host, because that show does air every weekend. And you can catch us at alannathan.com as well, where you can find some of the columns, anyway, that Alan Nathan wrote during his lifetime, columns, op-eds, as well as podcasts for the show and more information on the show on alannathan.com. And we also are on social media under Main Street Radio Network's pages, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, X at Alan Nathan. And we want to thank the Salem Radio Network as well for distributing this show. At this point, Alan would have read to you his pre-written topics that are out on those social media outlets. I got mine right here. In the wake of the deadly terror attack by an unvetted immigrant, Democrats side with attacker while brazenly supporting open borders with the racist claim that non-whites can't pass vetting. Well, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Wish I had a little more time to refine it, but I was having connectivity issues to the studio, and then also I was also recording stuff on a cassette tape player. It was a mess for the last 5 minutes. But anyway, so what's going on with this? Well, you heard about the terrorist attack last week, how this Afghani immigrant that was brought in by the Biden administration, who was here on a temporary visa which expired in 2023, but then he stayed around illegally until last year. And then in December of last year, he applied for asylum under the Biden administration. Then by April of this year, the asylum had been granted through the immigration court system. And then he ended up murdering a National Guards woman and wounding another National Guardsman who was still in the hospital as of this recording, with, still not in the clear as of yet. So what do Democrats do? Well, they come out and say that the National Guard shouldn't have been there. They say that this terrorist had every right to pretty much do what he did. The National Guard is the one who were intruding. The National Guard was the one who were creating this division, creating this environment where shootings like this were going to happen. If the National Guard weren't there, then no one would be hurt. But that's like saying if police aren't there, no crime will be committed, right? And now in the wake of this, we've had Governor of Oregon come out and say that she's going to resist the Trump administration's attempts at immigration enforcement in the state of Oregon. And all of this is to aid potential terrorists like this? Is that what Democrats want? But then on top of that, you have Senator Mark Kelly, you know, one of the ones who told the military to commit acts of sedition if they are given legal orders, but the Democrat Party decides those orders are illegal. Well, Mark Kelly came out and said that as far as demanding vetting from third world countries go, you know, you can't do that. There's no way you can do that because that would be racist. There's no way they can pass vetting, therefore it's racist, is the general thrust of what he said. He came out on NBC's Meet the Press, and in response to Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem's comments about pausing third world migration to ensure proper vetting, he just says, oh, they don't want brown people coming to the U.S., and I find that disturbing. That's his exact quote. They don't want brown people coming to the United States, and I find that disturbing. That's his quote in response to properly vetting people coming into the country. Does he think they can't pass vetting? Is that why? Because that's what the question was. What do you think of these people putting a pause on immigration until we can do proper vetting after a terrorist got into the country because he was not obviously not properly vetted? And Senator Mark Kelly, who claims to have the military's back, yet seems to support this terrorist who just shot two members of the military and killed one of them. Mark Kelly comes out and says, well, if you properly vet them, brown people can't get into the country anymore. Well, wait, what does he know about the people we've been importing then? And why is he in favor of importing terrorists? Maybe it's because the same reason that we see his colleagues and ideological allies supporting the terrorist who shot up two National Guardsmen. And saying, oh, the guardsmen were the ones who had the right to be here. That terrorist had every right to be here and every right to feel mad about those guardsmen on the police on the streets policing the area. It's rather sick, twisted, and disturbing logic when they think that the terrorist has more right to be here than the law enforcement authorities making sure everything is safe. And it's coming from D.C. residents, too, some of this. You know, the ones who were aware of how much crime there was in the city to begin with. We've talked about that plenty of times earlier on the show, starting with when the National Guard first deployed back in April, and how city residents, you know, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough was saying how D.C. residents were openly against it, but secretly in favor of it because it was a crime-infested crap hole, which even MSNBC's Joe Scarborough agreed with. And now they're coming out and saying, well, the National Guard had no right to be here. This a guy who overstayed his visa but still somehow managed to get asylum because of Biden immigration judges, probably, this guy has every right to be here and every right to be mad and every right to take out his anger against these National Guardsmen, is what the defense of this person has been. And their overall defense of immigration seems to be, well, if you properly vet them, they won't be allowed to come into the country. Therefore, you have to lower the standard of vetting in order to allow more people in. Otherwise, you're racist. And we see that's Democrat logic in general. Lower the standards, otherwise you're racist. Non-whites can't be elevated to the white standard. Therefore, you need to lower the standard to allow comply with what the non-whites are capable of, which is incredibly racist, and it's nothing new. It's nothing Democrats hadn't believed 100 years ago. I guess when they talk about that great party switch myth, you know, after the Civil Rights Act passed, they say all these racist Southern Democrats switched to the Republican Party, and then the Republican Party became the racist party. It doesn't seem that way. It seems like racism is still very much in the DNA of the Democrat Party when they're coming out there saying that non-whites aren't capable of being civilized, therefore you have to let the terrorists in, otherwise you're racist against non-white people, which is what Senator Mark Kelly went on to NBC to say. And we see that with the education standards, too. I've talked about them, of course, on the Al Nathan Show prior, how they have this idea that if the courses are too advanced and you're only getting Asians and white people in the courses, you need to drop them. They've done it in Massachusetts, several school districts in Massachusetts. They dropped advanced courses because they were just too white and too Asian. There weren't enough blacks in them. So instead of thinking, well, gee, what can we do to elevate these black students? Their thinking was, let's just erase all achievement. Let's just artificially put a ceiling so that whites and Asians can't achieve. Therefore, the blacks will feel better about themselves. And then what happened in the state of Oregon, going back to them, who just seem to be all kinds of messed up, I guess, probably from that brief period where they flirted with decriminalizing every drug. But the state of Oregon, they decided that reading, writing, and math should not be high school graduation requirements. You should not be able to proficient in them in any way, shape, or form. There should be no standard for that because it's racist. Black people can't perform at high levels, therefore it's racist to expect them to. And I think we can trace all this really back. There's this one Democrat theoretician, Dr. Arlene Hieronymus. She came out with this book in like the 90s or late 80s or whatever, arguing that racism caused genetic damage to blacks, and blacks are genetically damaged by being expected to behave like white people. And we saw this reflected in 2020 when Democrats at the Smithsonian said that white values included courtesy, punctuality, the scientific method, you know, just about everything you need to create a functioning society, they said was a white value. And cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, where you can just go in and steal whatever you care to. No one's going to stop you because it's racist if they do. Actually, Al Sharpton even railed against this sort of thing, calling it the bigotry of low expectations, which is a term that the late Alan Nathan used a lot as well, the bigotry of low expectations. You think that they can't perform any better, so you treat them as if they can't, and then you call anyone racist who thinks they can. And that's now what Democrats are justifying their open borders policies by saying. These non-white people, they can't be properly vetted, because if you do, you'll be rejecting the whole lot of them. Therefore, you are racist for wanting to do that. And NBC lapped it up, obviously, when Senator Mark Kelly, who called for sedition by the military against the Trump administration, demanded we let terrorists in as well, after a terrorist killed National Guardsmen. So it makes you wonder, whose back does this man have? You know, when he says, we want the one military to obey legal orders. Well, what, you want them to die? More Alan Nathan Show after this break.
Next year marks America's 250th birthday. And what better way to celebrate than an elevated train journey through the American Southwest? Canyon Spirit offers the adventure of a lifetime with scenic train journeys through rugged canyons and desert landscapes, along with gourmet dining and world-class service. Expansive panoramic windows allow guests to watch the magnificent scenery best seen by rail, including river canyons, red rocks, and more. Canyon Spirit travels between Salt Lake City and Denver with overnight stays in Moab, Utah, and Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And the train only travels during the day, allowing guests to enjoy the journey and relax overnight in charming small towns. TV host and travel expert Kelly Rizzo.
I think there's a certain romance to boarding a train, especially through the iconic vistas of the Southwest. Canyon Spirit offers a front row seat to these breathtaking wonders, along with historic storytelling and regionally inspired gourmet dining. It's truly a wondrous experience.
To learn more, visit CanyonSpirit.com.
Butterball, the best known and most loved brand of turkey in the U.S., has partnered with renowned ChefCore brand Headley and Bennett to create the first ever Thanksgiving hosting pans. Butterball turkey talk line expert Corey Gustavik shares more.
Roasting whole turkey isn't something most of us do every day. It can be intimidating and stressful, but the right clothes can make you feel more confident and comfortable in the kitchen. That's why Butterball created the first of their kind Thanksgiving hosting pants. Designed with a fun turkey print in Butterball blue, these pants are sure to give you swagger in the kitchen while keeping all your cooking essentials within arm's reach. With custom pockets for your meat thermometer and phone, loops for your utensils and towels, and a bottle opener to keep the party hydrated, these pants will help you get a leg up in your hosting duties this year. Butterball is giving away for free one final time while supplies last at noon Eastern this Monday, November 17th.
Learn more and claim your pair of hosting pants at ThanksgivingHostingPants.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give me a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org, a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show, everybody. Soaker Joe, show co-host Joe, hosting the program today. And we are joined for this segment by Robert Romano. He is Executive Director of Public Policy at Americans for Limited Government. Robert Romano, always happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's great to be back.
Yep, glad to have you. And so over at DailyTorch.com, you have this piece titled, Did the Shutdown Cause a Recession? What's What Trump's Second Term Approval and Consumer Confidence Show? I kind of thought we were already in a recession, at least until they redefined it last year. So what's going on with this?
Well, obviously, the economy's been slowing down considerably since peak inflation in June of 2022. And so I think whatever's been happening with the economy weakening vis-a-vis labor markets, unemployment's up by more than 1.7 million since January of 2023, has been years in the making, almost certainly caused by the inflationary period. Usually those are followed by recessions. But we do note in the recent data from the University of Michigan that consumer sentiment is coming at critical lows, kind of in the low 50s there. And the last time we saw that was during COVID. And generally speaking, this almost always happens during recessions, that you have a downtick in consumer sentiment. And you also see spikes in disapproval. All these things that happen to be coinciding with the government shutdown. So then you go into the psychology of recession. What causes you viscerally to pull back from spending? Does this lead to layoffs if people all cut back on spending at the same moment? So you can have a recession occurring simultaneous to a drop in consumer sentiment caused by the government shutdown. It could have a semi-causal impact, although suffice to say, this has been years in the making coming off of the peak inflation. But oftentimes there are catalysts like COVID suddenly causes people to pull back. You have economic lockdowns. It's the most visible, deliberate recession that we've ever seen. And there is a psychology to consumers as it relates to curtailing spending. So we'll see how the data stacks up, how much of a hit the economy took during the government shutdown, which, by the way, was completely pointless. This was intended damage to the U.S. economy. Democrats have told us for really decades about the economic impacts of government shutdown. It used to be Republicans who wanted to occasionally shut down the government to defund Obamacare. Now the Democrats are shutting down the government to fund it more. And so, and they've complained about the economic impacts of those shutdowns in the past. So they should be well aware that what they were doing deliberately which harmed the U.S. economy.
Yeah, and with no legislative victory to show for it, instead they got probably a bunch of people who are pretty angry because they would feel that they were tricked into coming out to vote in the elections because, oh, we got to counter Trump, we got to support our Democrat brothers in the Senate or whatever. We have all this energy coming in, we have all this winning coming in, we're beating down the Republican Party with the shutdown, and then Democrats cave right after the election.
There's an element to that where their own voters might be dissatisfied with Democrats. I think that, we also see the president's disapproval rise during the government shutdown. So I believe that Democrats see political advantage to this, considering the midterm climate and cycle that we're in right now, which will favor Democrats. You have a special election coming up in Tennessee, and Democrats will probably overperform. The Republican will underperform, which usually happens in special elections, depending on which party is occupying the White House. Midterms go a certain way. If a Republican's in the White House, Democrats do better. If a Democrat's in the White House, Republicans do better. And that applies to midterms, special elections, and so forth. So I believe Democrats believe that even if the economy was harmed, it won't harm them politically. Although Democrats might be vulnerable in primary, Mamdani's elections should be viewed as unusual, to say the least. Democratic socialists, if the economy was doing awesome in New York City, if affordability wasn't a problem, then Mayor Adams probably would have never been chased out of office by his own party. He switched parties. He becomes an independent. Andrew Cuomo runs. You have Mamdani beats him soundly in the primary. if the economy was doing great, I doubt somebody like Mamdani would be getting elected. And then you see another socialist Democrat in Seattle getting elected as well. There was an attempt to do the same thing in Minneapolis, although it failed. This is when you have like Democrats running against Democrats in all blue terrain. And I think that the economic situation from the inflation, affordability, will go in that direction. So Democrats are trying to compensate for that by making sure that the economy sticks to Trump and Republicans as well. So there is tactics involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting how if they had damaged the economy with the shutdown, the establishment party figures who were in support of that would be the ones to suffer once the primaries came along.
Mm-hmm. Nope. It depends on who's in the White House.
Once the primaries came along, not once the midterms came along.
Yeah, no, by the time you get to go back to 2013, there was a government shutdown. Ted Cruz was trying to defund Obamacare. It didn't work. But Republicans went on to their largest House majority in modern history since the 1920s. 2014 was a really good year for Republicans. And so there was really no political harm to the government shutdown for the party that was perpetrating it, which is why they'll probably keep on happening.
Hmm. Yes, that's an unfortunate side effect is that government workers now, their paycheck, they know their paycheck isn't secure because the moment they hear, you know, government shutdown, they're like, oh, well, there goes my job for a little while. And
true.
You know, we keep hearing this advice, you know, oh, if you're generic advice for every employee, oh, the best thing to do is to have 6 months worth of paycheck saved up, as if anyone can really do that with Americans living paycheck to paycheck. But government workers of all people are the ones who really need that.
Right. Now, politically, where it could come into play if Republicans were smart would be in states like Virginia and Maryland going forward. How do you, but they'd have to pledge that they wouldn't do shutdowns. And they have, you know, we have the famous shutdowns of the 1990s with Newt Gingrich. Like, that's kind of what Republicans are known for. and then again, with the Ted Cruz example in 2013, I think that there's a lot of blame to go around when it comes to government shutdowns. So the politics of it may just kind of be what they are, and it probably, as far as the employees go, are the ones who should be upset about it the most. Government employees, kind of lean Democrat. If you just look at the federal workforce and voter registration, et cetera, I think what you find is that they lean pretty heavily Democrat, almost 2-1 in certain circumstances. In teaching, it could be like 3-1. In university professors, it could be like 10-1. There's a lot of kind of partisanship kind of baked into the bureaucracy. And so people just tend, as I mentioned, tend to blame the party in power. I'm not sure how that translates to government employees. If they're so lopsidedly Democrat, you might just find they blame Republicans for everything. Mm-hmm. On the margins because of their political background. It's like asking a Republican if you approve of Trump right now, and like 90% say, yes, I approve of Trump. And then 90% of Democrats say they disapprove of Trump. So there is that element of the politics of it are difficult, I think, particularly for Republicans, because they don't participate in institutions as much as they should.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was interesting that the polling for this most recent shutdown had shown, unlike previous ones, everyone took a hit. You know, previous ones, Democrats usually came out the winner. But then, you know, this time the president lost a point or two, Republicans lost, Democrats lost, everyone lost. You get the final word on this. We have about 20 seconds left.
We'll find out when voters vote in 2026, both in primaries, if the incumbents are losing on the Democrat side, and in the general election, if Republicans, the House incumbents, lose.
All right. Well, Robert Romano, appreciate you being on. And listeners, he's with the Americans for Limited Government. And also, we've been discussing his piece over at DailyTorch.com. We got more Alan Nathan Show after this break.
Hilton has once again been ranked number one on the world's best workplace list, according to Great Place to Work and Fortune. The hospitality leader has now topped the list twice in 3 years. At Hilton, its team members say the hospitality industry is where they can learn, grow, and achieve their career goals. Victoria, a sales director at a Homewood Suites property, explains.
Hospitality is the warmest industry that you can go into. The care, the nurturing, and the areas of opportunity are large. There are so many different elements in hospitality, and I don't think everyone thinks about the larger picture that they could fit into. Hilton has always been just a welcoming, open-armed, flexible place to work. I'm going to look forward in enjoying more stable work days and the ability to just have that work-life balance that I truly want.
To learn more about what makes Hilton a great place to work, visit stories.hilton.com/worldsbestworkplace.
Everyone wants to give the perfect gift this holiday season, and the choice is easy. Gift cards have been the most requested gift for nearly 20 years, and experts recommend knowing how to gift smart to maximize gift card joy. A 30-second safety check can spot potential problems quickly before you give the card to someone. Look at gift card packaging to make sure colors, logos, and text match others on the shelf. Feel the back for bumps or extra layers that are thicker than other cards. Check the pin covering to make sure it's smooth and fully intact. Examine edges for cuts or tears that can signal a card has been tampered with. If something doesn't look right, choose a different card from the display and give the suspicious card to a customer service or checkout clerk. Gift cards are designed for joy, and taking the few extra seconds to gift smart can make a huge difference in keeping holiday spirits bright. Learn more at giftcardsafety.org. That's giftcardsafety.org.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay. Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show by Slipper Joe Show. Co-host Joe here today. And so we have more of this stuff about these about Democrats, how they say law enforcement itself, the very existence of it, is what's causing the problem in the country. New York Congressman Dan Goldman, obviously a Democrat. You might have read about how over the weekend there was a violent riot in New York City because ICE agents dared to park in a garage while preparing for an immigration raid. Well, Dan Goldman says that the fact that they did that justified the riots. How dare you park in order to do your job? Your very presence here was enough to justify a violent riot against you. And blocking these agents into the in the garage, mind you, wooden pallets, traffic barriers, etc., even their own bodies to keep the agents from conducting the operation. So any kind of immigration enforcement is enough to justify violence and murder, according to the, we have Senator Mark Kelly, Dan Goldman, we have all sorts of folks who are kind of on the record saying this sort of thing, various media figures too. Well, no, Mark Kelly wasn't the one saying that. He was saying that if you have immigration enforcement, you're just racist, because how dare you try to vet people coming into your country, because if you do, they wouldn't be able to come into the country, because not a single brown person out there can possibly meet any kind of standard that you set. Any kind of non-white out there is just so subhuman, according to Democrat Senator Mark Kelly, that you can't possibly have an immigration standard, otherwise they wouldn't be able to get into your country. That's just vehemently racist on their part, vilely, viciously racist on their part, but they revel in it. And the reason they get away with that is because they add this little caveat. Now, like I said in the opening segment, that nothing has really changed about the racism baked into the party's DNA since the founding, since, 100 years ago, 1920s, when the Democratic National Convention was declared the Klan bake because of all the KKK members that showed up. And we go back even farther than that. Post-Civil War Democrats with their founding of the Ku Klux Klan, although that was in response to rather tyrannical practices by the corruption as well by the North, but we'll get into that. So we'll just go back to the 1920s and the racism there. Or Woodrow Wilson, who resegregated the federal government because he said non-whites just couldn't compete with whites, so it wasn't fair, so we needed segregation. And that's what Mark Kelly is saying about why we need open borders. It's just not fair. These people can't compete with white standards. They can't compete with any standard. It's just not fair to them. They're ignorant savages. The only reason Democrats really get away with it is because there's a bit of self-flagellation involved now. You know, back then it was, in the 1920s, it was white is superior, we're proud to be white. Today it's whites are superior, but we're sorry for it. We apologize. It's our fault. Somehow. Even though they literally said in 2020, the Smithsonian, all these leftist professors, leftist activists got together and declared that non-whites were just simply genetically incapable of performing at the level of civilization intellect as whites, they actually did that. And they said that it was whites causing damage to these non-whites by expecting them to just behave themselves. But it's crazy, the racism, and like they say, these people are savages and it's your fault for expecting anything more of them because you're a white supremacist. That is what Democrats think anti-racism is. That's what the left thinks anti-racism is. And it's just, it's a laughable, it'd be a hilarious rebranding of the 1920s racism if it weren't for the fact that it works. This works for everyone. Why? Because it appeals to certain basic human tendencies for greed. We saw this when the government shutdown was starting, how all these folks who were on food stamps and EBT and whatnot, they treated it as an entitlement. These people who were saying, these are my food stamps, these are mine, not thank you, taxpayer, for giving me this generous gift to stay on course with my life, even though I'm having tough times. No, it was, I'm going to riot, I'm going to rob people because this is mine. I mean, at that point, can't we just say, and it was mostly black folks doing it, so can't we just say at this point that, at least on social media, so at this point, can't we say that food stamps are really a form of reparations? I would. Anyway, and I think we've paid our fair share in that since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society programs, which were designed to have this impact. They were designed to create generational welfare, to put black families on the government dole for generations, to never give them an incentive to leave. Because if the government's paying you to stay poor, why would you do anything if you're comfortable with that lifestyle? If it's in your nature, if it's ingrained in you from childhood that this is the way to do things, and you get free money for just existing, why would you work for any? It de-incentivizes work. And I've talked with my brother. He's been on the show before. He had a lot of experience handling Social Security claims and all that for the public with his lawyering, because he's a lawyer. I'm trying not to say too much to dox him or anything about what he's been and what he's done. That's why I'm just dancing around it here. But he's told me firsthand experience after several years on the job that, yeah, so some of this stuff is a trap, because these welfare programs are a trap because they pay so much better than just going out and getting a job, and you get so many benefits. And I actually lived with someone who fell into that trap, and she had a strong work ethic. She couldn't just tolerate sitting here taking taxpayer money when she was able-bodied and able to work. So the moment she did her best to get off these programs and go back to work after what she was going through was done. But the government doesn't incentivize that because of just how well these benefits pay out. And it becomes a trap because you're getting better than minimum wage just to sit on your butt all day. Why would you go get a job? And furthermore, when it gets cut off, you get this attitude that this is your money. You're entitled to it. You deserve it for being you, not for contributing anything to society except extra children in some cases. Welfare queens out there, we've had those since, I mean, Ronald Reagan was accused of being racist for campaigning on welfare queens. Or was it George H.W. Bush? It was one of those two. So for having welfare queens as being part of what they were campaigning against. And it's become just the standard for how to exploit the system to get free money for yourself and then not have any backup, not have any job, not have any way to sustain yourself except with taxpayers funding you. So again, I'd say that's definitely reparations. But this dependency that's created, Democrats are great at exploiting it. It's no longer the man holding down the black community. It's now the black community holding themselves down, because disproportionately they are the ones who are taking this government money. And again, like I said, they're disproportionately the voices that you heard on social media complaining when food stamps were cut off and when alterations are even made to food stamps. You know, Donald Trump, back in his first term, he tried to alter food stamps to handle the problem of food deserts, that is, places where communities are unable to get fresh food, perhaps due to high crime in those communities chasing out anyone who could provide fresh food. They were considered food deserts. That's the term coined for those areas. And so the first Trump term administration, someone proposed, hey, why don't we cut food stamps, but then make up for it by sending fresh food to these people so that, you know, who are living in the food deserts. So they're still getting the same value, but they're actually able to get it for food. They have fresh food, healthy food delivered to their house. That was considered racist. That was considered like a great civil rights violation for daring to try and solve the problem of food deserts at the expense of cutting some money that should have been spent on food anyway. So what were they going to spend it on if they weren't going to spend it on food? Right? It's because you can sustain an entire lifestyle between Section 8 housing and food stamps. I mean, you don't need anything at that point. You don't need a job. You're trapped if you just don't have the will to work your way out of it. And it's that kind of exploitation that the Democrat Party pivoted to, and that allows this support to come too. And these people are told that they're entitled to it because, well, whites have been racist toward your communities for all these years, therefore, or you're a single mother and men are sexist and bigoted and society's bigoted against you. So here's a bunch of government money. Shut up. Stay in your lane. Don't threaten our power. And in fact, you better vote for us, because the other side's going to take all this free stuff away from you. The other side wants you to actually go out and get a job if you are able-bodied. The other side actually values work, which is racist, as they said in 2020, as the Smithsonian Institute, a very leftist group, the Smithsonian Institute, all these professors, historians, scholars, left-wing, they got together and said that. It's almost like Democrats just want to keep women and minorities down with these bigotry of low expectations. And they created welfare programs, federal programs that ensure that it's much more attractive to just sit on your butt and vote Democrat than it is to actually be threatened by things such as high taxes, loss of freedoms, etc. So, with that, I mean, we've seen it before. Humans are basically lazy. If the government incentivizes it, why would you be anything else? And Democrats are great at exploiting that kind of thing. Anyway, folks, we got more Al and Nathan Show coming up after this break, so stick with us.
Earlier this year, a photograph of a vibrant blue Volkswagen bus sitting relatively unscathed within a decimated Malibu neighborhood became a symbol of hope during the Palisades fire. The bus, a 1977 Type 2 named Azul by its owner Megan Weinraub, attracted the attention of Volkswagen, who offered to restore the vehicle to its pre-fire form. Now, at the Los Angeles Auto Show, Azul makes its first public appearance. Volkswagen's SVP of brand marketing, Rachel Zaluzik.
Azul caught the attention of people around the world, reflecting the resiliency of the people of California. We're proud to have Azul as part of the Volkswagen family.
Megan Weinraub.
When the photo went viral, I felt like the world experienced a piece of my heart. I was touched. Volkswagen reached out to help. And now Azul feels like a symbol of hope more than ever before.
Volkswagen also has pledged donations to the California Fire Foundation to support first responders and their families around the state. For more, visit VW.com.
Hi, this is registered dietitian Mia Sin. I have tips to stay healthy through the holiday season and into the winter months. Now, I love the idea of a wellness getaway, and Victoria, British Columbia is the perfect place to refresh and revive. You can set your intention for the new year this January in Victoria, British Columbia at TourismVictoria.com. Now, I'm a huge fan of superfoods, and Chilean salmon is a nutrient powerhouse. It's high in protein, omega-3 fats, and vitamin D, and a source of other nutrients that can support your immune health. Now, sorghum is another great food to incorporate. It's versatile, naturally gluten-free, and a natural source of antioxidants and a good source of protein. And finally, supercharge your wellness regimen with plant-based supplements. Rainbow Light's new liquid herbal tinctures feature sustainably harvested plant-based formulas crafted with care. Find them at the Vitamin Shop and VitaminShop.com. For more, visit NutritionByMia.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show by Soaker Joe Show, co-host Joe, hosting the program today. Thanks for sticking with us through this hour. So this topic is kind of Trump's tariffs have kind of left the news cycle with some of them being softened and, plenty of other things to focus on in the news. But they're still there, believe it or not. Even if we don't think about it, they're still there. You know, it's like the sky. You might be trapped indoors all day in your cubicle, but the sky is still out there and the sun is still shining while you're in a dingy, dark cubicle. But anyway, joining us now to talk about the tariffs and small business concerns about them, we have Bruce DeTorres. He is Director of Communications at the American Small Business League and the Don't Cheat Women Project. Bruce DeTorres, happy to be on the show again. How are you today?
I'm very well, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So the Black Friday sales have set some records, according to CNN. It's like 4.1% better than last year, over $11 billion spent. Well, I mean, that's good. Is that necessarily something for small businesses to celebrate and some laurels for them to rest on, or do these tariffs continue to raise concerns?
Great question. Our impression is they're going to be of concern for quite some time. We see lots of people in authority and experts that with credibility that say, listen, the full impact hasn't really been felt yet. However, as you just alluded, it's really great that sales did surge over this, past holiday weekend. And America is a small business nation. A lot of people don't know that 99.9% of all businesses in America are small businesses. So it's, we watch it intensely. We've got our gripes about some of the things the federal government is doing. But, the jury's out because any day you can search and find prognosticators who say, the economy is resilient and the effects of the tariff have already been absorbed. But like I said earlier, there are plenty who say, no, it's still going to unfold over the next 6-9, even to months to a year.
Hmm. Yeah, and with that kind of ripple effect going into the future, really it is hard to tell so early on what the impacts might be. And I guess the Black Friday sales might not be an indicator, or perhaps they could be because, I only saw the raw numbers, but how much of that is rather not consumer spending on more items, but spending more on single items because of higher prices from the tariffs?
Indeed. And it's only Monday. I have yet to parse the boost, the good sales on Black Friday and presumably over the weekend. How much of that went to small businesses? How much of that went to big businesses? It's unknowable at this point right now. And also, we have to bear in mind just because different tariffs are in place this year and higher tariffs for the most part, before America can manufacture what it used to and compete and bring and reindustrialize here and bring all that manufacturing back, that's not done in 1 year. That kind of workforce, that kind of equipment, that kind of infrastructure that has to be put into place to offset what looks like it's going to be the cost of the tariffs. These are the big moving parts. It's hard to summarize in 8 or 10 minutes. But these are the big picture things. Now we could drill down into other things.
And unfortunately, you know, the average voter out there doesn't seem to have much of an attention span because, you know, they're wanting solutions right away. I mean, we saw, and also politicians are very quick to play upon that. And we saw, like, the day after Trump got into office, there was a Democrat politician out there saying, oh, the price of eggs hasn't gone down. So I guess he broke his campaign promise. You know, that's just how fast we expect things to move in this country.
That's funny. President Kennedy, in one of his speeches, said, a new senator from California, a couple of months into his new term, this is way back in the 60s, right, got a letter from a constituent during the campaign. You promised to reforest the Sierra Madre Mountains. You've been there a few months now, and you haven't done anything yet. What's going on? You know, it takes a little time. But in all seriousness, anyone who searches can find lots of concern from small businesses that, no, we expect to really feel a crunch, to really be bitten by higher, you know, costs of everything. And, you know, it's tough to find accurate and consistent facts and figures, Joe, because this is my full-time job. I look at this stuff every single day. And really, depending on, I guess the mood of the search engines or whatever, and the experts don't agree, but this is how it ever is with economics, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's a question for small business. How do you plan for this kind of thing when even we're now how many months into the tariffs and we still can't predict how this is going to impact anyone? We have all these conflicting signs on what it's going to be. And it's like, well, if I like what this guy is saying, but what if they're wrong? What if I'm biased for listening to them? And it just gets so confusing.
Well, it does. And we also have to remember what we experience when you and I go shopping and we see the price of things. Have they come down in the last year? I don't see that. And I don't hear that, you know, from friends, family, just on the street level. And there are a lot, like I say, there are lots of surveys and small business groups, et cetera, that you know, really have their finger on the pulse of these things. Like, we have a particular focus on the federal contracts, you know, which is a whole other conversation about how little the federal government, if they really wanted to help small businesses, an overhaul on the contracts that should be going to small businesses that are really going to big businesses. But we can have that conversation another day. Suffice it to say that we can't just take Scott Bessent's word at face value, and we can't take even the naysayers and the doom and gloomers at face value. With everything, there's a fire hose of disparate opinions out there, and one really has to sift and sort and think for oneself and draw your best conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's part of the risk of managing a small business. So going into this, what do you think about, is there much enthusiasm, though, since the tariffs, the prediction is impacts in the future? You know, like you said, we're talking like 6 months, 9 months, a whole year down the line. What about this holiday season, though, so far coming up? What's the feeling on that?
Well, the feeling, you know, except for the big boost apparently on this past weekend, which is nice, the feeling that I've seen going into it is lots of concern. Lots of concern about the cost of doing business. Lots of concern about profit margins being squeezed. Lots of concern about not being able to find the talent and the employees that small businesses need. That's really the bottom line as I see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bruce DeTorres, appreciate you being on the show today to talk about this. Real quick, about 20 seconds left, where can our listeners find out more about the American Small Business League?
Thank you. Our website, ASBL.com and Don'tCheatWomen.com. Great information.
All right, but our websites are MainStreetMediaNetwork.com and AlanNathan.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.